Hello everybody and welcome to the Green Room Sports Turf podcast brought to you by the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. My name's Carl and this is episode 6, in conversation with Steve Isaac of the RNA. It's an interview that I recorded with Steve after his Golf Course 2030 talk, which took place at BTME, held last week in Harrogate. The week after BTME is one where the entirety of the bigger team takes an opportunity to draw its collective breath ahead of the coming season. For many, it feels like the week after Christmas where we can actually relax and look back over some of the things we've done, some of the successes and some of the failures. For the Greenkeeper International team, though, we've got things a little bit different, as there's a magazine sent to print just a week after BTME. In that magazine, we stick in a review of everything that happened during the exhibition, so there's quite a lot of work to be done. So apologies if this introduction to the podcast is a little bit brief this week. That's just because I've got to run downstairs and finish putting together the magazine. In this podcast, as I mentioned, we're bringing you a conversation with Steve Isaac, who's the Director of Sustainability at the RNA. Steve's is a role that will increasingly come into the limelight over the coming years, as the pressure on golf courses to perform sustainably and within an ecologically friendly framework increases. Over the last couple of editions of Greenkeeper International, we've had a look at Golf Course 2030, which is the latest scheme proposed by the RNA and supported by many of the major industry bodies, including Bigger. The idea is that this new roadmap will lay out how golf courses will soon be operated to enable a bright future for the game. It's going to take in changes to legislation, new technology, reduction in resources such as water and sand. There's a huge amount that goes into it. And it's a piece of work that's underway and Bigger's obviously supporting it as much as we can. Before we get cracking with Steve though, I wanted to congratulate everyone who came along to BTME at Harrogate. We had three fantastic days with an unbelievable amount of education taking place. In total, there's something like 6,000 hours of education actually took place, you know, was absorbed by visitors to the show, and that's absolutely incredible. Throughout in the show itself, there were product launches, prize givings, and thousands of Bigger members who all came together to develop their own skills and knowledge and to network. I'll hopefully be bringing you some of the conversations I had with Continue to Learn speakers and other visitors over the coming weeks in this podcast. I've got to say as well, congratulations to Jack Percival, Stuart Imerson, and the team at Halliford Golf Club. All three were incredibly deserving winners of the Bigger Awards 2019. I've never seen a standing ovation at an awards ceremony such as that before. It really was a special occasion, and you can read all about it in the next edition of the magazine. And of course, if you want to get involved in the podcast, drop me a line by calling 01347 833 800 or email carl@bigger.co.uk. We're also on social media, and I'd really love to get as many greenkeepers as possible involved with this podcast. It's your tool, it's your association, so just get in touch. Okay, on to my chat with the RNA Steve Isaac.
Well, BTME to us is a way of getting our messages out to the industry. So many of the key players for what we're about, at least from the golf course management, the sustainability aspect, are here this week. It's the greenkeepers, it's the superintendents, it's the club managers as well, it's the committee people. Without them implementing what we espouse and working with us to make sure that it's the right thing to do, then I don't think anything we do would happen.
Fantastic. It's not as glamorous as the Open, it's not as exciting as those.
You've never worked in a porter cabin at the Open, clearly.
Yeah, I have. How does it rank, though, BTME, on the sort of the golf industry calendar? Does it rank up with those? Or
It's massive. And for us, it's a welcome relief from a continual round of dealing with administrators. This is our touchstone to reality. We're talking to people at the coalface, the people whose livelihoods are totally dependent on them delivering the product to golfers, to all of our customers. So for us, we look forward to BTME as much as we look forward to the Open.
fantastic. That's a great answer. Thank you very much. Okay, so Golfcast 2030. We've seen features in Greenkeeper International about how it's a roadmap, an almost undefined roadmap at the moment of how the Golfcast will look in 2030 and going forward. You mentioned in your talk, 50 years, after 50 years. I want to start by asking, is this your, from a professional point of view, is Golfcast 2030 your main focus going forward?
Yes, I think certainly from the point of view of our sustainability committee, and sustainability is one of the seven pillars of the strategy of the RNA, it's very much a focal point. It's the initiative around which most of our work will revolve now. And it's a mechanism by which we can focus our funding support, our support in kind, because I think up to this point, the process of working with the RNA has been, we've got a bright idea. We'd like the RNA to support us in this and give us some money. Great. But there's been no structure to that. I think Golfcast 2030 gives us the opportunity to provide a real structure to that funding and support process whilst addressing the key issues of the day.
Okay. There are a number of key issues in golf. There are things such as increasing the number of women and males playing, increasing participation on a whole. Where, in your eyes, does this Golfcast 2030 rank on that sort of ladder? Right.
Well, this is one of the initiatives that I think has a participation element to it that the RNA has embarked on over the last couple of years. I mean, obviously, you're aware of the Women in Golf Charter, you're aware of the Golf and Health Initiative, you're aware of the nine-hole competition that we've run for the Open Championship, lots of other work that we're doing in terms of participation, particularly with our affiliates, the national governing bodies of the game around the world. I think Golfcast 20 sits quite nicely into that suite of work, because at the end of the day, if we can't produce a product that people want to play, participation goes out of the window. So this is a very, very important part of that puzzle. But it's not the only part. If we have great golf courses, but we don't have accessibility or affordability, but again, no one's going to come and play those great golf courses.
Interesting.
So it's just part of the puzzle.
Okay. Is it too simplistic to ask why golf needs to change?
No. I think you look back at history and golf has changed a lot in history.
Mm-hmm.
We're not playing with feathery balls anymore. We're not playing with hickory clubs. Well, most of us aren't playing with hickory clubs anymore. We're not using horses to draw our gang mowers on the fairways.
Yep.
So golf has changed a lot over the last few hundred years. I think what we're recognising now are that there are greater challenges, particularly in relation to managing golf courses, than we've probably ever seen before.
Okay.
At the talk, at the seminar we've just had, there was regular reference to the toolbox available to the greenkeeper.
Yeah. So
that toolbox is changing. A few spanners have been thrown out, some more screwdrivers have come in. The tools available to the greenkeeper are changing. And we need to adapt to make sure that we make the best use of the tools we have available to us. And that may well mean that we change our management plans, the way we look after golf courses, in a very different way in 10, 20 years' time than how we do them now. The focus might be on plant protection products that aren't based on a chemical structure.
Yep.
It might be that the more cultural management comes into play. It will certainly be a case that we will need an exceptionally well-educated workforce to make the most out of the toolbox that we're going to have available to us, because it will be a more limited toolbox, I would suggest. And to get the sort of course conditioning that we would like to see, we're going to have a well-educated staff at the golf club to make the most of it. I think in terms of Greenkeeper education, again, coming back to BTME, and this is just a fantastic week to support the education of Greenkeepers. What we need to do is to convince the golf clubs they need to invest in their staff, because their future could depend on that.
Absolutely, very much so. I wonder, when we talk about the loss of products and that sort of thing, I'm wondering, is the golf course of 2030 very similar to the golf course of 1930? You know, are we actually, in many ways, are we looking backwards to go forwards? And it has to be said, golf courses have got better and better. That means if you are going to look at the practices of 1930 and that sort of thing, golfers might need to accept that their golf course isn't quite at the same level it has been in the past.
I'm not sure. I think the golf course of 2030, maybe not 2030, maybe 2040, 2050, 2060, is going to be a different experience.
Okay.
But I think it's going to be as enjoyable, if not more enjoyable.
Yeah.
I think potentially, yes, we might be going back to the 1920s, 1930s in terms of how the game is played. It might be played more on the ground. It might be a more running game.
Uh-huh.
Golf courses might be firmer. They might be drier.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily have to correlate with poorer quality turf.
Mm-hmm.
Turf quality might be just as good, if not better, than what we have now. I mean, I travel the world in my job, and I see lots of golf courses that are heavily overwatered, heavily overfed.
Yeah.
They don't produce great golfing conditions.
No, absolutely.
So I think there are a lot of golf courses around the world, even the best golf courses in the UK at the moment, that could actually be better if we take the opportunities that this faces. And I think that was an important point that one of the panel made, that this is not all negative. There can be a lot of positives coming out of it. Lots of opportunities to make the game better.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I saw on one of the slides, one of the most almost worrying slides, was something like by 2030, half the rivers in Europe will be short on water supply. Will there be enough water left for golf, for what we need?
Well, I think, again, as pointed out one of the panel meeting members, these are all predictions.
These are all predictions.
And predictions tend to change over time as we gain more knowledge.
Yeah.
And the predictions tend, I think it was Christian Spring from SDRI who said that the only thing they're really capable of predicting is that things are going to become more unpredictable.
Absolutely. And that touches upon so many levels. The sand scarcity is a really interesting one, because obviously sand is such an important, and having the right sand as well for top dressing and bunkers and that sort of thing. That, I don't know if it's worrying but is it too early to get worried? But,
well, I think part of the Golf Course 2030 messaging is that you need to look at these things well in advance of them becoming a worry.
Absolutely. We need to take this seriously.
We do, absolutely.
Yeah.
Water is probably the classic. And there are plenty of golf courses around the world that use recycled water, desalinated water. There are solutions out there. You have to adapt your management program depending on the quality of the water that you're able to afford and have access to. But there are solutions out there. Different grasses with different water requirements. So there's a lot of existing knowledge that we can apply to that. I think sands are slightly different in that there is no alternative at the moment to the sand we dig out of the ground.
Yeah.
But hopefully, as that's been identified as one of the main issues for GB&I, we'll be starting a process of research and education that we can find ways of conserving sand, ways of potentially finding alternative materials to replace natural sands. Again, the beauty is we've got experts developing these action plans, which will lead to research projects, to education projects, which will hopefully find useful solutions to issues such as sand availability.
And if not, do you envision that bunkers themselves could become something of a rarity? Something
as a very poor golfer, I would very much like bunkers to become more of a rarity. And again, it's a bit like the overwatering situation.
Yeah.
So in my view, and I've spoken to a number of architects about this, we over-bunker a lot of our golf courses.
Absolutely.
When you see the amount of sand, the size of bunkers, the intricacy of bunkers. I was in Australia 10 years ago, and they did a baseline study of the time spent on golf courses by Greenstaff. And one of the average numbers that came out was that green staff in Australia, or at least the courses involved in this study, there were a small number of them, the green staff spent 27% of their time maintaining, rebuilding bunkers.
And imagine budgets, very similar, it's massive, probably around that massive, same percentage massive. Of your budget.
And that's looking after a hazard.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be in them. So a reassessment, and I think this is where course renovation, a lot of golf courses are renovating and looking at the architecture. That's a great opportunity to seriously look at bunkering. Do you actually need all of those bunkers on the golf course?
It's true, you can achieve, often you can achieve the same thing with a bunker as you would perhaps with some mounding and a piece of rough.
Absolutely, ground contouring, which is a lot cheaper to look after.
Absolutely.
And a lot cheaper to change over time. Changing mowing patterns, you can adjust the way the golf course is set up. So I think we will see a future with probably with fewer bunkers on our golf courses, smaller bunkers on our golf courses maybe, more wild areas. And we're already seeing this being implemented in a lot of countries, and particularly we look at the States. They've drawn back a lot of their manicured turf. And I think that is a trend that we will continue to see.
Yeah, envision a day when somebody's still excited to see a bunker. But who knows, we're not there yet.
So if we could do the same with water hazards, that would be even better.
Yeah. Some of the things you touched upon in the seminar was climate change and coastal erosion. Okay, they're going to happen whether golf likes it or not. What is the reason for investigating them? Because eventually there's nothing you can do.
Well, I would argue that golf clubs can do things about coastal change. It may not necessarily be that they can retain the boundaries of the existing golf course. They may have to remodel the golf course. They may have to go through a process of what's termed managed retreat. It's possible. That through combinations of hard, soft engineering, Roald Dornick have just done some work in renovating a salt marsh, which dissipates the energy of tidal movements. So there are potentially things that can be done to protect the coastline. Whether they can be afforded, whether they're going to be, it's going to be permissible. The statutory authorities have control over that. The Crown Estates have control over a lot of that in terms of the coastline of the UK. Golf has to argue its case, but every golf club on the coast can do something about it. Some people might perceive it as defeatism to change the golf course. It may be that some, if they don't have land available to go elsewhere, and there will be issues in that, because if you're moving the golf course inland, you're moving away from the soils and the habitat and the environment that makes a Lynx golf course.
Absolutely.
So they may change character.
And the climate change side of things, I think it might be a case of that better educated greenkeeper that learns to become more reactive, or couples long-term planning that builds in safety buffers, along with an ability to react to this, you know, the snap of a finger that, a storm's coming, or it's going to be ridiculously dry and we're going to have to do it. I think that would be the case.
I would suggest the word is proactive rather than reactive.
Proactive rather than reactive.
This is all about planning for the future. This is trying to make sure that whatever comes your way, you're prepared for it. You might not be 100% prepared for it, because God knows what's coming out of the skies.
Absolutely.
But you have a plan that will secure the long-term future of your golf facility in one form or other. And it might be different to what we have now. It might be the same or similar to what we experience at the moment. But the great thing about greenkeepers is that they've always adapted to changing circumstances.
Yep.
You can't work outside in the UK without being able to adapt.
Absolutely.
You might be able to do it in Florida, where you can predict the weather day in, day out. But greenkeepers are great adapters. And I'm sure they will continue to do that.
One of the things I really was really interested in on the slides, as part of it, you mentioned a standard measurement for golf courses.
Right.
Is that something that's going to be like universal across golf courses, that you can actually, in the same way, you know, like a standard scratch or a, a TripAdvisor rating or something like that, that you can actually, you may actually be able to look and see how a golf course is rated, and
that's a possibility. That's certainly not on our agenda at the moment. What mm-hmm. I was talking about more is our ability to objectively assess the quality of the condition and playability of the services we're producing.
I feel like that would almost inevitably lead to a rating system between golf courses.
Quite potentially. You'll be familiar with the STRI program, and they work with a golf course. They set targets for things like smoothness, trueness, firmness, mm-hmm. moisture content. It's not beyond belief that at some point in the future, if a golf club hits all those agreed targets, mm-hmm. then there may be a stamp of approval of some description that they can use for marketing purposes. But it's certainly not on our agenda.
Absolutely interesting.
That will probably be tied in with other measures like geo-certification. If a golf club had geo-certification, it was hitting its playing performance targets, might you consider it a four-star golf facility from an offering for the golfer, probably allied to what the other offerings in the golf facility, the clubhouse, catering, all the rest of it.
Well, again, I mean, that would be a very interesting point, and of course it would be dependent on budget and all that sort of thing. Some places would have to accept that there are a certain level and that sort of thing. But do you see a situation where we're talking about less sand and we're talking about these new practices that are going to have to come on board for clubs to keep going, that sort of thing. Do you see a situation where potentially if somebody doesn't take it on board, that it becomes a requirement that you have, that we say for golf to survive, this is now a regulation, you have to do this?
I'm not sure we'll ever get to that point. I mean, golf isn't structured in the way that other sports are, in mm-hmm. that the governing bodies do not give diktats down to golf facilities. I think the best thing we can do is raise awareness of the challenges, the opportunities that the game's going to face. And the worst case scenario is if you don't take note of this, if you don't act upon it, then potentially your golf facility is in danger.
Mm. Well, potentially, and almost certainly it's in danger. And I envision I've had this conversation a couple of times with people over the last few days, where in the future there almost certainly will be less golf courses, in fact. Do you agree that that's probably going to be the case?
I think that there will always be that equation of supply and demand. Mm. And I think we, as a golf governing body, need to make sure that we do everything in our power in terms of the condition of the product that's offered, in terms of the accessibility of golf courses, mm-hmm. the affordability of the sport, the inclusiveness of the sport, that we make it as appealing an offering as possible, in the hope that 20, 30, 50 years time, we have a game that is well developed and that still has a growth capacity. Now, whether that's in terms of facilities, or whether it's in terms of participants, mm-hmm. or whether it's in terms of different types of facility.
Just changing the experience of
absolutely.
Playing golf.
Yeah. So I think golf has a very bright future. I think it's just going to diversify.
It's going to be a different game, possibly, going forward.
I think 100 years ago, I think the people who play golf 100 years ago would still recognise the game now.
Yeah.
I think 100 years time, a lot of people would still recognise the game. Mm-hmm. But there will be formats of it that they may think are fairly novel.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we discussed, the course may look different. Should we ask how greenkeepers can help us work towards these aims?
If greenkeepers can't help us, then nobody can. because at the end of the day, it's what greenkeepers do on the golf course. Yeah. Certainly from the point of view of this initiative, that will make or break it.
Yeah.
If greenkeepers aren't producing a good product, then the whole thing has failed. So greenkeepers will play a pivotal role, and hopefully we'll get to a point in the process where greenkeepers will engage directly with the process as well as the outcomes.
And the hope is that through being there and supporting the game and actually maintaining the game as they do at the moment, but perhaps without recognition. Mm-hmm. We hope that will change. And
well, I think greenkeepers need to be a little bit more aware of the importance of their role to the business of the golf facility.
Yeah.
And talk more the language of the other decision makers in that golf facility. Mm-hmm. If you go to a committee, a board, if you go to the club manager and you start talking about the number of kilograms of nitrogen per hectare you're applying, I'm not sure you're going to get a warm reception. If you start talking about the things that are important to them, how well you're doing in terms of meeting your budgets, how you're producing better playing conditions with the budget, the resources you've got to work with, for the golfer, the messaging for the golfer. We're keeping you on the main greens for 365 days a year. We're giving you top quality performance. Mm-hmm. It's the language that they understand, and they go away thinking, wow, yeah, the greenkeepers are working for us and they're giving us the product that we mm-hmm. want.
I think there will be some hard conversations, of course there will, down mm-hmm. the line, but such as perhaps 365 days a year, golf may not be possible. No, who knows? No, who knows? No, it's speculation, of course. But I think it sounds like you're optimistic that if we get this right, there's a very...
Yeah, maybe we should have talked about the potential availability of the golf course. But yeah, I'm very optimistic. And one of the reasons for that optimism has been the level of engagement across the golf industry that we've seen to this initiative to date. I think it's important from our role as a facilitator that we retain that enthusiasm, that engagement, by making sure it delivers.
Brilliant. Okay, Steve. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you. Okay, that's all for this week. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Steve Isaac. Certainly enlightening, and he told us a little bit about the RNA and its position in golf, and how bigger and greenkeepers can work together with them to make sure that the golf industry has got a bright future, which means jobs for all of us. We'd love to hear your feedback on the podcast and all the other activities undertaken by Bigger throughout the year. If you'd like to get in touch with me about the podcast or our magazines, Greenkeeper International and Your Course, email carl@bigger.co.uk. That's Carl with a K. If you wouldn't mind, take the opportunity to rate us on Apple Podcasts, as it'd be good to get this to the top of the list. The more people know about the sports turf industry, the more understanding they'll have about the hard work of bigger members and other greenkeepers. Hopefully be a bit more appreciative when they see out and about the course. And speaking of bigger membership, if you're inspired by what you hear to progress your career in greenkeeping, then a major first step is signing up to the association. The opportunities for career development are countless and potentially life-changing, such as volunteer opportunities at major tournaments and educational opportunities across Europe and the USA. Just ask Dan Ashelby, who's out at the moment enjoying the terribly cold weather out at Massachusetts. Dan won the Toro Student Greenkeeper of the Year 2018, and part of his prize was the turf school at University of Massachusetts. Absolutely incredible, hopefully life-changing, and we'll hear from Dan when he gets back. If you'd like to get in contact about any other aspects of your bigger membership, including member benefits, support, or learning and development, call 01347 833 800 or email info@bigger.co.uk. For the golfers out there, if you're a golfer and you've got any questions about anything you hear on the podcast, the first thing to do is have a conversation with the greenkeepers at your club. They've got the expertise to explain what's happening and how it fits into their long-term vision to improve playability of the facility. Remember, everything they do is for the good of the course. You can also get in touch with us on social media using @BiggerLimited on Twitter. Or if you're a greenkeeper, you can join our hugely popular Facebook group, which can be found @GolfGreenkeepers. We've also got a Facebook page where all the latest notices, news releases, and information from Bigger can be found. And we're on Instagram using @Bigger_HQ. The Green Room Sports Turf podcast is produced by myself, Carl Hansel, on behalf of the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. Thank you very much for listening.